This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com.
Welcome to Through the Ringer. I'm your host, Tate Frazier. It is Tuesday morning, so you know what that means. I am joined by the great, one of my favorites, Cousin Sal.
Wow,
how's it going?
Really nice. You're one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's great. We saw Monday Night Football last night, so we got to start there as we typically and always do. 24-22, the Denver Broncos stunned the Buffalo Bills. And let's just go to the end of the game because this should have ended the Buffalo Bills get away with the win, right? They win by 1 point. The Broncos miss a field goal. But wait a second, we got 12 men on the field. Let's start there. How insane was that moment in time?
Yeah, well, this was not, let me just say up front, not my favorite way to lose $100.
Okay. Yeah, that was not good.
I didn't like that part. I had the Bills on the money line. Let's take it right before the field goal, though. 3rd and 10. Mm-hmm. Not right before, but 3rd and 10. They're at a field goal range, and McDermott, I blame McDermott for all of this. I don't even care if he's calling the players or not. He sends not 6, but 8 guys. They're right at a field goal range. He sends 8 guys, and Russ lofts it up, and in typical fashion, Russ fashion, it's underthrown, and the D-back can't get his head turned around in time. Pass interference.
Right.
Spot. They do some weird stuff with the kneeling. They're not doing their kicker any favors. Instead of running it up the gut, they had success running. The field goal was no good, and then 12 men on the field. They rushed the field goal team on. They, in about 8 seconds, they get mm-hmm. the whole field goal team on.
And they did this right before the half as well.
Yeah.
We saw the Broncos do this and get it off, and it worked. And
yeah.
Will Lutz made a 49-yarder into the win, which seemed insane. So maybe that was the precursor for them to believe that they could do this, but it was very rushed.
And all
it
the Bills had to hurried. Do was count. They were already there. They just had to count how many guys they had.
And the guy who was the 12th man happened to be standing right in front of two officials with his hands in the air.
And you know who it was?
Who was
Damar
it?
Damar Hamlin. No, it wasn't him. No, I don't think it was him. No. But anyway, that would have been an interesting story.
Well, Damar Hamlin did come in this game and play on the last drive and actually made a tackle. So there was some positive stuff for the Bills.
He should tackle the coach after the game.
Well, let's talk about that because Buffalo right now, there's a lot of finger pointing going on. They're 500. They are on the outside looking into the playoffs. They would not even be a wild card team at this point. Many people prognosticated before the season they could be a Super Bowl team, a team that can go the distance. Josh Allen could win the MVP. How do we feel? What does the panic meter look like for Buffalo right now?
It's got to be high only because you look at their schedule, and I feel like I look at everybody's schedule, and it's tough. Like, oh, they have a monstrous ending.
Lines with Bill Simmons. You're going to have to look at the schedule, right?
I know. I'm going to have to quit that gig. Let's look at it. All right, Jets and Patriots. Those are the easy ones. At Philly, at Chiefs, at Chargers, at Dolphins, and home for Cowboys. There's not an easy – even the Patriots and Jets, I wouldn't say those either.
Divisional games, right?
They lost to the Jets, yeah. So I don't think that's easy. They're 5-5. Denver's like 4-5. I don't know. Are we ever going to get to a point where everybody's got?
I'm tired of half games. I want whole games separating teams. We'll eventually get to that point. I think at some point Roger Goodell will make that happen.
Please,
but
Roger.
I do think there is a question about Sean McDermott because there was already some rumblings, you know, early in the season about how bought in is this team? Are they tired of listening to the same guy? Mm-hmm. And when you have these mental lapses, is the best way to describe them. I think people will look at the head coach. They're not going to look at the star quarterback. They're not going to look at the star receiver. And the defense has been decimated by injury. So Sean McDermott might get the finger, right? I mean, not that finger, but the finger point.
Let him get all the fingers. I don't know. I think we talked about it on this show. It's the kiss of death to be named coach of the year. McDermott got one. Daboll got
Stefanski.
One. Like Stefanski. All these guys with the mental lapses. It's the new Madden curse.
Yeah, it's not good. Let's talk about the Broncos. Their defense has 9 takeaways in their past 2 games. I'll say that again, 9 takeaways in the past 2 games. That is an insane rate, but they've been able to force a lot of turnovers. This is the same defense that gave up 70 points to the Miami Dolphins. How crazy is it to see that they flipped the script completely, and now they've won 3 straight games?
I don't think I've ever seen anything like it, like defensively. Like, you don't get that much better in such short time. You know, you could have said, all right, they played tough against the Chiefs. That's how both those games, but you know, they were sellers at the deadline. No, a lot of teams, I think three or four teams wanted Patrick Surtain. They didn't part with him, and they went from that 70-point game to just playing lights-out defense. It's really an interesting. So I don't know. I lost track of the apologies. So Sean Payton apologizes to Nate Hackett, or I'm not – which way is it going now?
I do think that Sean Payton is somehow winning the war. He did lose the battle head-to-head, but he is winning the long, cold war between these two coaches. And
Hackett's got to concede.
I think Hackett's got to take a knee and get out of the way, right, at this point. And also Russell Wilson, he's calling Coach Payton Coach Pate. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's in a much better mood. His voice is getting deep again, and he said that it was relentless. He said that they were relentless tonight. How do we feel about Russell Wilson? Because he has the numbers this year to kind of back up that he's having a good year.
Yes, they – his voice is getting deeper. I think the over-under was week 6.5 before he went through puberty. And
right.
So it happened. Yeah.
Sierra's happy.
Listen, he is not giving the ball up. He's right. He has 4 interceptions this year? We've compared his numbers to Mahomes favorably.
I think 18 touchdowns, 4 interceptions.
He's not hurting them. He is not hurting this team.
He's actually the plus player on this team. Yeah. So shout out to Denver. Do we believe the Broncos have any sort of path to relevancy this season? Or is this just optimism for the future of the, you know, Sean Payton, Russell Wilson regime?
I feel like these teams are so similar now. Like, deep down, I think we'll talk about Cincinnati later. I think they're better than a lot of these teams who are struggling. But you put these teams on the field, and you're going to get 24-22 type games the rest of the year, I think.
Yeah, we had 6 walk-off field goals this week in the NFL. Mm-hmm. So there was a whole lot of conversations. Now let's play one of my favorite games. You know it, Sal. We do over-underreactions. I give you a statement. You tell me if it's an overreaction, an underreaction, or a proper reaction. Yeah, you can do it. You've been doing great this entire season. I can't believe we're already in week 10 right now. But let's talk about it. And let's start with the rookie sensation himself. C.J. Stroud is in the MVP conversation. Overreaction or underreaction?
Well, you just brought it up, right? So technically, it is in the conversation.
Right.
Just because
now we're having a conversation.
Yeah, you audible.
I think it's a proper reaction now that we've
had it. I think it is because you mentioned, if you had you written it on a piece of paper and handed it to me, then he wasn't in the conversation. Yeah, listen, it goes to a quarterback every year, right, this award, MVP? So if he's second to Howell in passing yards and with one fewer game, I think, you got to consider him.
And it does feel like the American public at large is sort of falling in love with, you know, he kind of checks all the intangibles, he looks the part, and then he's been able to go down and get wins. And now his coach, D'Amico Ryans, is in the conversation for Coach of the Year. So you might have a dual situation where a rookie QB could win MVP and the coach could win Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
But like you said, you want to avoid Coach of the Year like it's the plague. So
right,
maybe
exactly.
D'Amico Ryans, maybe tank and don't win that
one. Yeah, I'm going to give this to Frank Reich, this award. Yeah, thank you.
He can do the Ja Morant when he won, the most improved, and he gave it to Desmond Bane. That's
not
probably
for
a
me.
Good move. Yeah. Yep. Next up, I got this one for you, Sal. The CFL, the Canadian Football League. If you don't know about the Grey Cup, go look it up. The CFL has more QB talent than the NFL.
Oh, so many greats.
Yeah, right.
Trevor Harris, Vernon Adams. These guys are terrific.
These guys are good.
No, come on, Tate. You're being funny. It's an overreaction. But
right.
I will say we're about 2 Tommy DeVito interceptions away from it being an underreaction.
I think Chad Kelly should be in the NFL. I'm going to put that out there right now.
Is that the Eli Manning character?
No, he's
Chad Kelly?
It sounds like Chad Powers, but Chad Kelly playing well for Toronto. He just lost in the playoffs, but that's a CFL conversation. Let's keep it to the NFL. In fact, let's talk about college football because I got a personal over-under reaction for you. Only students should storm the field after big wins. Of course, Carolina-Duke rivalry game this weekend in Chapel Hill. I was there. People stormed the field. People are upset about this. We can play the tape right now. You can watch this happening, Sal. Is that an overreaction, underreaction? How do we feel about storming the field?
First of all, I have many different reactions on neither side of this. First of all, you claim you taped this.
I did. I was there.
I think somebody else taped it, and you're on the field.
Oh,
said,
wow.
Hey, please
you
record
this. You think
this
is my Zapruder film?
Yes, exactly. I can't look like a jackass here, so please record this, and
yes.
I'm going to have fun
Mom,
with my
hold
friends.
My phone while I go run on the field with the rest of the kids. Right.
Students, adults, moms, your aunt Ira, I don't care. Nobody should run on the field if you're an 11.5-point favorite.
I agree.
Come on, that was terrible.
Yeah, but it was at least a double overtime win. You've been dealing with Mac Brown.
I don't care if it takes 4 days to win that game. You were a 12-point favorite.
It's Carolina football. Storm the field whenever you win.
Right.
It doesn't happen
often. That's why
often.
You did it.
Yeah. No. Oh, you got me. Next up, speaking of Carolina football, Drake May, who now Bill Simmons, our boss, is in love with. Let's say this. Drake May will be the next Patriots quarterback. Is that an overreaction or underreaction?
I saw Drake May throw the ball twice. That's all I need to see. It's an over. First of all, I hate this version of the Patriots fan, maybe more than even the
winning version, right?
When they won, because now it's like not only I'm gonna root against my team, you know, like no, nothing can hurt me because they're losing and I'm rooting for them.
They think that now losing is winning, right?
Yeah, I win again. The team I'm rooting for is winning.
Like, you literally cannot win for losing with these guys.
Yeah. A and B, it's a foregone conclusion that they're gonna now I'm on double A. Draft Drake May, and that Drake May is going to be great.
Like, yes.
So they're going to make all the right decisions.
And people forget Mac Jones was also drafted by the New England Patriots,
sure, right.
Correct? Yeah, and
they
he was
liked
the
15th
pick.
Right?
Oh, he was the franchise quarterback. Yeah. At least that's what they told me. And then Bailey Zappe came in, and then they told me he was the franchise quarterback.
Right.
How many franchise quarterbacks can one franchise have? Sounds like they have two right now, which means they have zero.
Listen.
And now they're trying to get rid of Bill Belichick.
They deserve a subpar quarterback for the next 150 years.
Agreed.
And God willing, we're around to see it all.
I think it's going to happen. Yeah. Fingers crossed. Drake May, stay out of there. But I will say, if Drake May is the quarterback of the New England Patriots, going to be great for him. And great for me, to be quite frank. I might be on the Bill Simmons podcast every once in a while.
Well,
talk about Drake May.
You'll be storming the field. So I don't know if you'll get an internet connection from the 50-yard line.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to lose all my credibility once they find that footage. Let's hope they don't. Fingers crossed. All right, Sal, next up, we got the Pastronaut. Josh Dobbs is the most likable quarterback in the NFL. Overreaction or underreaction?
I think it's an underreaction. He's super, super, super likable. He posts a video of someone singing "Can You Take Me High" or whatever the Creed song is to his play going. It's great. Listen, we have to root for these no-name quarterbacks to do well. We have to root for some of them, and then it makes it, you know, we'll be able to stomach the really bad ones like Bryce Young. Sorry.
I just blacked out when you said that. What'd you say?
I said we have to. You heard what I said.
Well, Josh Dobbs, I thought he's endeared himself to the audience there. He said he started listening to Creed because he went to Minnesota. Also, when he walked into the facility for the first time, he asked one of the security guys where the locker room was. I thought that was really endearing.
Yeah.
So he's just one of us, and I think that's why we all like Josh Dobbs, except for he also interned at NASA, so he might be smarter than the rest of us.
Yeah.
The Pastronaut, best nickname in football
now.
So shout out to Josh Dobbs.
Good kid.
Yeah, very likable guy. Next up, Sal, a team that might not be the most likable, but they are playing like they are supposed to, very on brand. The Raiders will make the playoffs. Overreaction or underreaction?
That's an overreaction. It's fun to think about that. They're so smoking cigars. They're behind Antonio Pierce. They got that all going. But listen, they beat the two New York teams, right? Let's not get crazy. And after this, they have Miami, Kansas City, Minnesota, and Kansas City again 2 weeks after that. So, and Aiden O'Connell's their quarterback.
Yeah, shout out to Brother Bry. He's been through a lot of tough quarterbacks there in Oakland and, you know, all through the iterations of the Raiders in general. But do we think Antonio Pierce is the guy to be their head coach? Do we think that we look up next year at this time and we say, man, Coach Pierce, what a great year for him?
I hope he gets a sweetheart deal and he gets fired with $60 million on his contract.
Right.
Mark Davis is paying everyone $500 million.
Yeah, shout out to Jimbo Fisher getting paid $75 million. Don't bat an eye at that. And he can also get another job he's getting paid $75 million. Yeah. So college football is a great career path. If any of the kids are out there and you got an idea what you want to do.
None of the kids are out there.
Yeah, they're not out there. But they could be college football coaches. Last one, Sal. Ron Rivera should lose his riverboat title. Again, it comes up this weekend. He could have gone for two. There was about 50 seconds left in the game, so maybe a little bit brash, but they end up losing in the end to Seattle.
Yeah.
And then everyone else is pointing the finger to say, look at, you know, what's happening with Dan Campbell and the Lions? He's going for it on 4th-and-2. That seems like more riverboat energy than Ron Rivera. How do we feel about that?
Yeah, I don't know about analytics or anything, but I kind of feel like had he gone for two against the Eagles and had he gone for two Sunday against Seattle, we both knew that the Eagles and Seattle were going to win that game if it ended up tied and they get another possession. I think he wins one of those. Now they're 5-5, and they're hosting the Giants. It's a different story for that 7 seed. So.
And it felt like for a time in Washington, they were trying to figure out who the quarterback was. Now they have a quarterback. Sam Howell leads the entire NFL in yards. And now we got to look at the head coach and Ron Rivera. Good run there, but we'll see what happens.
He's got to ditch the nickname. He's got to do it. He's Rickety Raft Ron. That's
right. And now, speaking of Riverboat, or what once was Riverboat, let's do the Riverboat question. Let's do some prop culture, and let's talk to the captain. No McCaffrey touchdown, so that streak is over at 17. The question this week, what's the next long-standing streak in football to fall? We got Tomlin's 500 or better seasons at 3-1, the New York Jets playoff drought at 7-1, Cowboys seasons ending in demoralizing fashion at 30-1.
That's not funny.
I can't believe someone put that in there. Nah. TV timeouts containing at least one Josh Allen commercial, 75-1, and the field is at even odds. What are you? Who are you taking, and what are you taking?
Boy, I would have chuckled at the Josh Allen thing, but I mean, you got to take him off TV at some point. I am going to go off the board. I'm going to take the field at even odds, and Chris Collinsworth to break his own record of saying pass rush in 97 consecutive Sunday night games. I think he's
it's a tough word to say.
It is. Yeah, it's very tough for Chris.
Yeah, it's a mouthful.
Can you say it?
Pass rush. it's tough. Hard. Yeah, I know.
I think he takes a week off and then ends up breaking that record down the road. That's my answer.
I like that one. I'm going to take Myles Garrett to break Reggie White's record of having 9 straight seasons of 10-plus sacks.
Oh.
He's had 5 straight. I think he's on a path to get a 6th straight. And then from there, he's already, you know, above pass. Well, I guess he's past halfway at this point, so he's already on his way. So I think he breaks that record.
It's a great pass rusher.
Yeah,
one of the best.
My favorite pass rusher. Well, there you have it. Shout out to the Riverboat captain for that one. That was a fun one. We love to see streak snaps. Sal, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to look at the future and do some line look ahead.
All
stay right there.
I'll wait here.
Through the Ringer. I am still your host, Tate Frazier, and I'm still here with Cousin Sal. And we're going to have. Yeah, you're still Sal. Yeah, it turns out. We're going to do some line look aheads because that's what we do here every single week. And let's start with Thursday Night Football. We got Cincinnati traveling down to Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Ravens -3.5 in this game. Who do you like? Both teams coming off losses this past weekend and trying to bounce back.
Yeah, man. First of all, this was at 3. It went to 3.5. It seems fair. But the Ravens didn't do themselves. Really, both bad losses. Ravens could have separated themselves from the pack, would have had a game and a half lead over, you know, over the Pittsburgh at least. And Cincinnati, we're going to go over their schedule in a bit, but really rough. I mean, they are looking at 5-5 if they lose this, and playoff implications are tough. I think Cincinnati sneaks it in, but on these games with 3 days rest, you'd never, ever know.
Yeah, Thursday night never makes sense, and we feel bad for Al Michaels every time that we're watching a Thursday night football game because it feels like he also is trying to make sense of what he's watching. One thing that I do know about Baltimore specifically is that they dominate the first quarter. It feels like every single game they start out, you know, they get shot out of a cannon. They get a big lead. They did it this past weekend against Cleveland. They're up 17-3. And then, of course, we all know how it played out in the end. Is that a surefire bet at this point? Just bet the Ravens first quarter?
Actually, it's only 2-7 this year.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. No, it's been great because the games they lost against the Colts, against the Steelers, and on Sunday, they were winning all those games. We saw them get a big lead against Seattle. Yeah, they're burying team, and they can't hold the lead. It's weird. The 3 games they lost, they had a probability of winning of 92% or more. So it's crazy. I don't know. Maybe Harbaugh's taking some heat off his brother. It's like, all right, I got to show off a little.
Yeah, he's just got to get the attention away from Jim. Right. Yeah, that's really nice of him. That's a brotherly love right there. Let's track to the future real quick, and let's look at the AFC North winner. Right now, the Ravens are still the favorites at +140. You got the Browns at +200, Cincinnati at +430, and the Steelers backing it up at +550. Considered the best division in football, based on the odds, obviously it is. How do we feel in this? There one team right there that you kind of feel good about, Sal?
I still think the Ravens are the best of the group. At this point, it'd be a hedge, though, if I took the Ravens, because I have the Browns at almost 3-1 odds from before the season. Mm. But I just can't believe, as tough and great as it is and all the injuries we've seen, that all 4 starting quarterbacks are still with us. Not alive. I believe that they're alive.
Right.
That makes sense. But, yeah, that they haven't. Did I just jinx it?
I'm going to knock on wood right now and make sure that it doesn't happen.
Yeah. Good quarterback play.
I like the superstition. Yeah. Let's stay in the AFC North because the next game we're going to talk about, the Pittsburgh Steelers, who kept the streak alive against the Packers. Packers haven't won in Pittsburgh since 1970, so that was kudos to them for keeping that alive. They're going to go to Cleveland to take on the Browns. Browns -4 in this game. Do we think that defense can hold up and get another win in the division?
This went up, too, from Sunday night. I think it's a fair line, though. We watched this first time they matched up, right, on Monday night. Mm-hmm. We watched together that gigantic 400-foot Spotify screen.
They took it away from
us. It's gone.
They said too much fun, too much football. Bring the basketballs back. Yeah,
they're like 4 guys a week are enjoying this. That's not good. We got to take this away. And now we watch on our phones.
It's been great. Yeah, I can barely hear what they're saying.
I think the Browns are better on both sides of the ball. I think they have a more dependable quarterback. I think the Steelers will get outgained for the 10th game in a row, And so Pittsburgh will probably win.
Yeah, that's how it goes, right? Pittsburgh just, you had a bet a couple weeks ago. It was like basically bet the first half for whoever Pittsburgh plays and then bet them to win the game.
I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah, it continues to cash in. So the AFC North, at least they have these trends that you can follow that do make sense. We talked about Al Michaels being lost. Let's track to the future. Let's look at the odds to make the playoffs in the AFC North. Right now you can get the Steelers at plus 116. Cincinnati is minus 132. And I think the one that's most intriguing, right now Cleveland is minus 340 to make the playoffs. So
they are begging you to take the no.
Right.
To take the no at plus 280 or whatever it is. Don't do it. I would stay away at this point. To make the playoffs, it's going to be I think all three could come from this division, all three wild cards. It is possible. So I wouldn't say no to any of them. But if you look at Cincinnati, that is bizarre at minus 132, unless you see the rest of their schedule. Steelers twice, Jags, Colts, Chiefs, Browns, all these teams have five wins or more. So it's going to be tough sledding the rest of the way.
Yeah, tough for Joe Burrow, who it felt like last week when we got done, right? There was a lot of people that were saying, you know, Baltimore is the best team by far. Yeah. You know, Cincinnati is probably the hottest team right now. And then, you know, in the NFL, all it takes is 1 week and we have totally different conversations. Right. That's why we do our over-under reactions. One of my favorite games.
Oh, that is one. I think it is your favorite. I know you don't want to commit, but I think it's your favorite.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite. Let's talk about another two teams in the NFC that are one's in the conversation. Another one is not. Tennessee is going to go to Jacksonville. This is an AFC South showdown. Mm-hmm. Jacksonville no-showed this past weekend. They're -6.5 in this game. What do we expect from Trevor Lawrence, if anything, in this one?
They're all so weird, right? I feel like all these South divisions, you get what you deserve by betting on either, right? So it's 6.5. This also went up. I don't know. I was hoping Will Levis would be better, but did he peak after that first game? I didn't like what I saw against Tampa Bay.
Some people were saying they got tape on him. I don't really know how that works. I don't know how, like, that one game where he throws four touchdowns, that was enough tape for them to dismiss him the rest of the year. But
what
that's,
about
that
no one's taping C.J. Stroud?
They're yeah, they're like, please, someone film this guy. Yeah, record it.
Same people fixing the Spotify studio or tape supposed to be taping C.J. Stroud. I would take the Jaguars in a teaser, but otherwise, I don't like these South matchups. Anything could happen, really.
Yeah, anything could happen. Let's talk about the AFC South. Let's track to the future and look at the winner. Right now, Jacksonville was minus 220 to win this division. You got C.J. Stroud and the Texans at plus 270, the Colts plus 1300, Titans plus 2100. Just looking at that right there, I'm licking my lips. It's enticing, the Texans at plus 270.
You're licking your lips.
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
Actually, I didn't lick my lips, but you know what I mean? I guess it was more figurative.
Colts, forget it. Titans, I think, forget it. So the Texans are the more fun bet, but I just think the Jaguars will have a little more at the end. Texans will not be shut out of the playoffs, though. So if you can bet that, take it.
And I will say that C.J. Stroud interception in the fourth quarter, I know they ended up, you know, driving down, kicking the field goal to win the game, but that was enough for me to maybe have a little bit of hesitation buying all the way in on Houston, and maybe it's my Bryce Young belief.
No one's ever allowed to make a mistake in your eyes.
Yeah, I know. You got to be perfect.
You're running a tight ship.
Yeah, really, it's tough. It's tough out here. Next up, we got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers going to San Francisco to take on the 49ers. 49ers -10.5 in this one. Looked great this weekend. Christian McCaffrey, unfortunately, did not score a touchdown, so his streak has been snapped, but regardless, the 49ers seem like they're back on the rails, and Deebo Samuel also back as well.
Yeah, it was probably the most important bye week in the NFL so far this year. The 49ers looked like
they need to get healthy.
A month ago, they looked like when they played my Cowboys, like when everybody plays my Cowboys, anybody good. But
except for Tommy DeVito and the Giants.
Not the DeVitos.
They do not like playing the Cowboys.
The chicken parm was stale last night for Tommy DeVito and family. 49ers are this much better than the Bucs when they're playing at their best, and you know, we saw Chase Young. Couple pressures there just solidifies that defensive line. They're in good shape, I think, and you know, as long as they stay healthy. And Brock Purdy, now everyone's back, everyone loving Brock Purdy again, right, for another 2 weeks before he goes, you know, throws two interceptions. But I think this is good. I want to introduce you to something called the three-team teaser. Me and your friend Bill Simmons, years ago, we thrived off of this. Mm-hmm. We made hundreds, and then we lost thousands. But no, we made hundreds at one point. You take 10 points off three teams,
right,
and there's a lot out there that could, 49ers being one team.
Yeah, I like that. Let's track to the future here. Buccaneers odds to make the playoffs. Yes is plus 172. No is minus 215. Do we believe in the Bucs? I mean, they do have a lot of talent in that building. It's kind of the leftovers from the Tom Brady run a few years back.
Yeah, and I'm going to pass. That's a Pasadena for me over here. I don't like Baker. Dallas, Seattle, Minnesota, those are my wild cards. Even though Tampa Bay does have the tiebreaker against the Vikings, they won that first game of the year. They have this game. They have the Jags. They're at the Colts. They're in Lambeau versus Green Bay. I don't think it's going to be enough.
Do we feel like Baker gets another year? You know, are we at the point now where we try to forecast the future of Tampa Bay? Do we think that this is Baker Mayfield's team, or is this just another stopgap situation like last year in Los Angeles?
I don't know if it's his team, but have you seen the other quarterbacks? They should sign him to like an 8-year deal.
Right. We talked about the quarterbacks. They are not thriving this year in the NFL. Let's keep it going. We got the Seattle Seahawks, another rivalry game here, going up against the Los Angeles Rams. Rams plus one in this game. How do you feel about the Seahawks coming off a tight win, against a team that was very feisty this past week?
A lot of Rams money coming in here. I don't know that there are going to be a lot of Rams jerseys. There never are at SoFi, but this was plus three, and now it's plus one. Don't forget, they bombed them in week one. The Rams beat them by, I think, like 20 points. In Seattle. Made us think the Rams were for real, but they're not. And Seattle's been erratic as well. I'm staying away from this, even though there is that revenge factor I talked about. I think it's too close to call here.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about Geno Smith at times. It feels like he's more of a roller coaster this year than he was last year. But, you know, he's had his moments. Tyler Lockett obviously looks good as well. Let's track to the future here. Let's look at the Seahawks win totals. Over 9.5 wins is minus 110. Under 9.5 wins is minus 110. So really not much value there. But what are your thoughts on the Seahawks? Are we thinking 10 wins for this team?
I don't. I know I'm trying to thread the needle here because I said Seattle's going to make the playoffs, but I'm not now picking them to win 10 games. I think they're 9-8. I think that's good enough to get in. So many tough games ahead. Dallas, San Francisco times two, Philly, and Pittsburgh. So this is, in a way, this is a must win. They are too erratic. Like we said, Kenneth Walker will have like two carries, and then he'll have like 15 for $160 or something stupid. So
right.
I want to see, really, come on, Geno, step it up. Like last year.
Yeah, DK Metcalf big in this game late. Yeah. Almost had a situation where he tries to get too many yards for the field goal, right. And then they end up not being able to spike the ball, but they were able to figure it out. How do you feel about Charbonnet? I feel like this was the weekend where, you know, he had a moment where it was a Marshawn Lynch moment, I like to say. He could have easily ran out of bounds, but he decided to try to run over a guy. And I was like, I think the Seattle fans will buy into Charbonnet, so maybe he could be the difference in the backfield.
Right,
for them.
That's the UCLA way, you know, just so many tough competitors.
Right. Everybody talks about how tough they are. That's right. A big thing. Last one, Sal. We got the Philadelphia Eagles going up against the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs -3 in this game. Travis Kelce flying all over the world to go see Taylor Swift at this point. But regardless, his team is ready to line it up against the Philadelphia Eagles. Who do you like in this one?
Did you cry when she changed the words, lyrics?
I couldn't believe that was such a thing, to be quite honest with you.
Are you allowed to do that?
I'm not sure. I think she has latitude, right? She's also a genius. You know, you let someone take away your masters and you get no money for it, and you say, you know what, I'll just re-record them all and re-release them, and then everyone says, I love this new music, even though I heard it 10 years ago.
I love that. I was hoping, did you see, you're right, but did you see the clip of Kelce with the father, the moment she changed the lyric?
Right.
Like, he happened to be paying attention, but it would have been so much better if he was, like, picking his nose and eating, like, a Reese's peanut butter cup from
or hitting him and be like, should we go in the back? Like, I don't want to be here anymore. Yeah. Like, I'm over this.
Didn't you hear that? Like, what? Oh, what? She said Chiefs instead of karma? I don't know what goes on.
I'm worried that we have, and you know this as a Cowboys fan, there was like the Jessica Simpson, Tony Romo was probably the most famous. We also had Miles Austin, Kim Kardashian. Is there a world in which, like, we get to the playoffs, the Chiefs are hot, they're expected to go win back-to-back Super Bowls? Could the cultural conversation turn where she could be cursed, or is Taylor Swift kind of untouchable?
Of course she could be cursed. Yeah,
okay. they anybody could be cursed,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I one's safe out there.
That's it. They'll send her back. She'll start dating those flimsy British guys again.
But oh man,
I love this game. Obviously, did you know this was a Super Bowl rematch?
Yeah.
People are talking about it a lot. Kelce brothers, Taylor Swift will be there. Joe Buck will no doubt have a snarky comment that'll go viral about something. So.
About all the Kelce conversation, right? Yeah. And then the pod. I'm sure they'll do their podcast from this game. Do you think that there's something to take away? Like, if the Eagles were to win this game, do we come away and say, oh, now they're the perennial favorites to be the Super Bowl, you know, team to come away with the Lombardi Trophy? Do we take big takeaways, sweeping takeaways from this game? Or is it just another week?
Yeah, I think it's fair. Although, you know, people didn't pass the baton to the Chiefs necessarily when they beat the Eagles. They blame the refs and everything. So it all depends on how you win. The Eagles win this by double digits, absolutely. I don't think they have to go and beat the 49ers or anything else. They would be the team to beat. But I think it's fair that the line is 3. I saw it at 2.5 for a minute. I'm like, give the Super Bowl champs some respect there. Make it 3.
Yeah, let's be respectful. Let's track to the future one last time here. Better one seed bet between these two teams. Eagles -140, Chiefs -135. Which team are you buying in to be the one seed?
It's so close. I think the Eagles, only because their schedule is just a little easier. If they get by the next four, you know, when three of the next four, which they should, Their last three are very easy. The Giants times two and Arizona. Mm. Those two teams are really battling for the top spot to get that number one pick. So who the hell even knows? Who'll be Tommy DeVito's nephew? I don't even know who lives with them.
I don't know how many DeVitos are out there, but
there's so many.
Yeah, they're trying to find them all. Cousin Sal, thanks so much for being on the show. We can find you on Fridays. Cousin Sal's Winning Weekend, and of course with the Ringer Wise Guys.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks. Let's do this.
Yeah, all I like it. Yeah. Joining us now, you know him from Mondays on my show, One Shining Podcast. You've seen him all over the Ringer universe. Of course, I'm talking about J. Kyle Mann, and you're in Los Angeles. It's great to have you out here in studio, man.
In the flesh. It's always great to be here to get a nice break from the cold. Starts to shift cold at home. Get a little break, get a little warm weather. Feeling great.
Yeah, get out to the West Coast. Yeah, it's great times. And you know why we got to talk about what's going on here. We got to talk about college basketball because it is officially, we all want to talk about the NBA. We all want to talk about the NFL. But you and I, we do the hard work. We talk about college basketball. And we had a pretty big weekend in the world of college basketball. Let's start at Cameron Indoor in Durham. Caleb Love goes back against Coach K's alma mater. Oh, wait, that's right. He didn't go to Duke. He went to Army. But Coach K gets in the building, and we get a showdown between Caleb Love, Coach K. Not necessarily one-to-one, but what were your thoughts on Arizona getting the upset in Durham?
Arizona has a new team. You know, it's a kind of a thing that's ubiquitous across college basketball is that, like, you never know who's on it.
Right.
You really have to do your studying, whereas you and I have joked about in the past whenever I'd come into the season, the studying and the learning who's on what roster was pretty limited to, you know, the transfers here and there, but really just the new players. You kind of had to get
acclimated. You learn the freshmen,
Yeah.
And if you're in the top 100 ESPN, you'll be all right.
Yeah, and you'll look up and you'll be like, oh, their spacer, their off guard now is a guy who came from, you know, BYU or so. Like, it's just kind of a, and Arizona is one of the like strongest cases of that. Arizona has a glut of transfers. They do have some guys coming back with Larson, and but they, you know, Caleb Love is a guy who it seemed like he wasn't in the plans in the long-term plans for UNC, as you put it, but comes in there and doesn't have the best game. He had some moments, but he also had some like kind of classic in the sense that like these are the things that kind of caused him to have a rough year after the amazing run that they had in 2022. But he, you know, they were able to, despite that, pull off the win, much to Coach K's, Mr. K's chagrin there.
Yeah, and John Shire's first loss as a head coach at home, as, you know, the head coach of the Duke Blue Devils. So that was noteworthy as well. They were the number two team in the country. Let's talk about the number one team in the country, the Kansas Jayhawks. Bill Self did not participate in March Madness last year. He's got another big-time transfer in Hunter Dickinson. Some people think the favorite to win National Player of the Year. How do we feel about Kansas, and who do we circle in Kansas and say, you need to know this guy outside of Hunter Dickinson?
They have a lot of interesting players in the fact that, you know, I think their front court is pretty incredible. I'd say it probably is the best front court in the country. I don't know if you can think of one that's better, honestly.
I know. And there's a lot of good bigs in college basketball, but they definitely have the best one, right?
Yeah, and the returning thing, we tend to give a little bit of a bump in this assumption that, like, returning automatically means that you're going to get better, you're going to be something different. We'll see. Hunter Dickinson has always kind of had the ambition to step beyond the line and shoot threes and things like that. We'll see if he's able to do that. He hasn't been able to successfully. His percentages are good, but it's not a thing where I'd be like, you got to watch the pick and pop from Hunter.
He's not Brook Lopez.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So he's not a Kevin Pitsnoggle type situation. But KJ Adams is another guy who
Love KJ Adams. Yeah.
He's built like a, I'm trying to think of a good comparison body wise. I mean, he's built like a tank. He's sort of an undersized four, but he is great at like reading screens, getting in the rim. He's a big time finisher in the pick and roll. McCullough also is an incredible player at the three. Great defender.
Possibly their best player.
Yeah, he's a dog. Yeah, I mean, and it's become a cliche to say, but he's a guy that just really makes them tick and makes them go. I'd say McCullough and KJ Adams are the two guys that probably are going to make this team sink or swim. In addition, well, the guard play is another thing too, but those are two of their strengths, I would say.
And how many teams can go into a season and say, we have a point guard who already won a national championship for us? I mean, you know, talk about Jalen Brunson when he was at Villanova, won as a freshman, then won again again in 2018, but DeJuan Harris could be on a similar path to be a two-time national champ. Let's talk about the number one pick, because if you're not a fan of college basketball, you immediately go to the NBA draft and you try to circle players that you want to, you know, save your franchise at some level. The 2024 draft is, you know, much maligned. It's not the Wembanyama sweepstakes we saw last year, to say the least. Everyone's trying to circle and figure out who it is. Right now, based on what we've seen, limited in college basketball, do we think the number one pick comes from college basketball, or does it come from the Ignite or international or somewhere else?
It's been interesting because, you know, normally with the NBA draft, we kind of look at the horizon of the guys coming up. It's almost like an army coming this way, and we're kind of sizing them up from a distance. We're like, oh, there's a big guy, there's a so-and-so. It's like you can usually see the number one pick, the behemoth of the player that projects as like, okay, this is a prime. Usually, every draft is different. We say that, you know, there might be one all-star in a draft. There might be a few starters, you know. Doesn't mean that picks are less valuable, but you have to kind of go from year to year and have an understanding of that and not criticize a number two pick from this year against a number two pick from another year.
Because, it's not one-to-one, right?
Yeah, so your expectations kind of have to be in line, but we don't really have anyone that
Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Ja Morant, not the same.
Not the same at all. Yes. So, and you know, I think when we look at this draft, there's not even really someone that like very obviously fits the role of like, this guy's obviously a primary option for an NBA team, obviously a hub. And when I say hub, you know, you just mean like they can score a lot and then they can respond to what the defense does and produce, kind of in the way that your Giannis's do, your Jokic does it to the nth degree. But when we look around, it's just kind of a everybody's just kind of awkwardly looking at each other at the party, and not kind of there's nobody kind of taking presence of the room yet. But there are some candidates. Did you want to jump into who those were?
Yeah, I was gonna say like who are so I think it, I'll throw out the five names that I think are the candidates, and you tell me if there's someone else that's in the pool. Number one, I think it's Isaiah Collier at USC, who's looked incredible early on. I mean, he's a bowling ball downhill, can finish either hand, and just looks the part at some level. Jacoby Walter at Baylor, I feel like, is a name that, you know, his first game, 27 points, kind of reminiscent to how KD made a splash in the Big 12 from game one, day one. You could see, you know, kind of the path there. There's Justin Edwards, who's at Kentucky, who I think, you know, some of the draft nicks out there, they have him kind of right now penciled in temporarily as the number one pick. So those are the three college basketball options. And then we have two Ignite options, Modest Puzelis, who, you know, kind of flirted with college basketball, goes the Ignite route. And then Ron Holland, who was supposed to go play at Texas and decided to go to G League Ignite after a great senior season. So those are the five that I have circled to say one of them could take the step to be the number one guy. Is there anyone else outside of that group that you may circle to say that could take the leap?
I think Alexander Saar is a guy that people are really looking a lot at. He has incredible size. I think he's 7'1", 7'2", depending on where you look at him. But if you look at him, he runs and has – he runs like a player a lot smaller than him. He's somebody that can really sit down in the chair and get low. I always kind of call these guys, they have dual citizenship in the fact that they have the size to defend. It's to bring up Giannis again. Giannis is the example
right.
of that. Of
Giannis somebody, could guard Jokic if he had to.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, they're the guys that can get low and basically make themselves smaller and to get down to be able to move with smaller players, and they also have the size to bother bigger ones. He's somebody to keep an eye on. The shooting with him has been a little bit hypothetical. He has kind of shoots the ball like Tari Eason. He kind of has it over here. He has an interesting release. I think you've covered kind of the cast of characters that are the most likely. We could have one of these international players that are playing college ball could emerge and get into the top five, but top one, I would be pretty surprised. I think you named, I think, the cluster where the guy's going to come from.
Right now, if you had to, you know, blindfold, make a pick, and you say who's going to be the guy that's number one, would you say it's Isaiah Collier? Because I feel like he's the one, the momentum is pushing that way for USC to have the number one pick potentially this year.
He was somebody coming in, you know, number one player in his class. People really were big fans of him. He played well, and he's played well in every grassroots situation. He was awesome at his high school, played well in the FIBA thing. But I think people started to kind of the doubt and the festering kind of feeling about his face-up offense started to kind of creep in. And you just felt the conversation drift away from him. And it's almost that scientific thing where you have an idea and then some doubt kind of comes and pushes against it. Well, if an idea is really strong, the doubt that pushes against it is going to reveal and shape that it actually is great. So he's going to be able – my point is that, like, I think Collier's going to hold up to that scrutiny.
Yeah,
ultimately,
right.
Because
right.
I think that he's going to be able to get to the rim – draw free throws. And I don't think the shooting is as far off as people think.
And I think he is one of those guys, the first game you watch him against Kansas State, he just looked the part already. So that's the good news for USC basketball fans. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to talk about the Kentucky Wildcats, the Louisville Cardinals, not so great, and upsets in college basketball. Through the Ringer, we're still here, myself, Kyle Mann, and we're talking college basketball. And the buzzword in college basketball is upset. Everyone's talking about the upsets. Of course, we got James Madison ranked in for the first time in the AP poll, number 24. They upset Michigan State in the first week. But we'd be remiss if we did not start when we're talking about the Holy Cross team that went in and beat Georgetown and upset Ed Cooley's run with the Georgetown Hoyas. We got to make our boss, Bill Simmons, happy. How do you feel about the upsets in college basketball? Are we shocked, or do we expect this kind of parity right now in the league?
Who's the quote from the beginning of the year that was saying that basically that this was, you know, the pressure's on the higher majors basically too? What we talked about the quote on OSP.
It was Tristan DeSilva at Colorado was talking about basically that all the blue bloods have all the pressure and that all the new bloods and all the up and comers have you know, the free reign to have fun.
Yeah, I think, you know, if you love parity, I think that that's one thing. You know, you hear a lot of complaining about players, you know, from coaches saying, you know, players don't stick around, they don't want to get better, they don't want to wait, you know, things like that. That's one side of it.
That's Rick Pitino's side, right?
He did say that. Meanwhile, he has a roster of all new players. So that's one side of it. The other side of it is, you know, the fact that, like, these places, there is a trickle-down effect, which if you flip it the other way, there are players being poached from lower levels, basically, you know.
It's a wild, wild west, right?
It is. It's wild in that it's going on a lot, and you don't know, your head's spinning from all the new players like we talked about, but it also is kind of, it does have that sort of, like, up-and-down thing going on. That, I think, is sort of like spreading the talent out a little bit. I think especially in a game like basketball where, you know, football, you need it takes a lot of people. It takes a lot of water drops to make a wave, to make a big difference, you know. And in basketball, really you just need a few primary colors. Like if you get a few different transfers, you know, if you get like three transfers that are solid, it can change the whole complexion of your season, whether or not those come from, you know, another, you know, we've seen high major to slightly less high majors. Like we've talked about Brandon Pajimski going from Illinois to out to Santa Clara. That's the kind of thing that can really change your program. And those are the types of guys that are falling between the cracks that are transferring to some of these other schools. I'm not saying that's what's going on with like Holy Cross or JMU, but I do think that it's done a lot for the parity in college basketball. I think it's good.
It's opened up the opportunity for these buy games, as they like to call them, because they're paying Holy Cross to come play Georgetown. So they're getting paid $100,000 to come there and beat you. But when you bring in a bunch of transfers like Georgetown and you're Ed Cooley, you're a brand new coach, you're trying to find continuity. You're trying to figure out your rotations. But it also lends itself to when you play a team that has some continuity, knows who they are, has an identity, they can upset you, even if you have more talented team, to say the least. So it's leading to good conversations and good stories in college basketball. We talked about the upsets. Now let's talk about the champions, more specifically the Champions Classic. We have Duke playing Michigan State, coming off a loss to Arizona. Tom Izzo coming off that loss against JMU. We also have the Kentucky Wildcats taking on the number one team in the country, Kansas. Kansas is favored in this one, -5.5. What are your thoughts on the Wildcats in this game? Do we think Calipari can find some magic against the number one team in the country in Chicago?
Well, from watching Kentucky, which I have intently so far this season, I can tell you that they are a team that is very fast. This is probably, I would say, along with like the 2017 team, which is like Fox and Monk and even Bam Adebayo is pretty fast for a big guy. Cumulative team speed in terms of that. This year's team is up there with that team in terms of fastest teams that Cal has had. You know, you think about the John Wall team. John Wall was fast, but and Bledsoe, but this team, top to bottom, they have a glut of guys that are in that like 6'1 to 6'7-ish range. And the story really, you know, they have Trey Mitchell, the guy that transferred who ended up there because of the Bob Huggins, you know, beer cans in the bag situation. He ends up, at, you know, by we'll call that divine providence.
Dude. Yeah, West Virginia got pillaged by every program in the country, right? Yeah, everybody was just like, which player on West Virginia do I want? God, the only one that stayed was Kirk Risa, right?
God works in mysterious ways. Yeah, sometimes in a trash can full of, or a trash bag full everyone of beer cans.
Everyone in the Bluegrass State just thanking the basketball gods, yeah.
Maybe he's an angel, like the country song. This is a team that's very fast, but I think they're going to probably struggle with bigger fours that can handle the ball, bigs that can get to the rim, that can slow the game down. They want to get in transition, basically, I think is what they're going to want to do. I think for them to even have a chance, they're going to have to really, really play like a junky kind of style, speed the game up, put a lot of pressure on Kansas and their struggles, which have been in the backcourt, which have been on the perimeter and shooting the ball. I worry about Kansas, you know, their ability to get to the rim and get easy ones and slow the game down. And that'll just, you know, I think that's going to put a lot of strain on them. I thought that five was a little low. I thought that you kind of had the same opinion, it seemed like.
Yeah. Now, we talked about the good in the Bluegrass State. Let's talk about the bad, because Louisville, perennially a top 10 program. Rick Pitino, a decade ago, won a national championship. I know we act like it didn't happen, but we all watched it happen. So
What? I don't even know what you're talking about. What title?
Well, 10 years ago, people have said that Louisville won a championship. Right now, they can barely win a game. They barely won their first game against UMBC. The second game against Chattanooga, they lose by 10 points. Now everyone is pointing the finger. Year two for Kenny Payne. They're spelling his name P-A-I-N, which is incorrect, but they're saying that they're feeling it right now. What are our thoughts on Louisville? And like, as we look at the program, like how do we fix this? Because this is a major problem for a top program.
Well, you know, the first question you've got, there's a series of questions that kind of just cascade from the first one. Is this going to continue? So, you know, based on what we've seen, you know, the vibe is, you know, not that vibes are something that you're going to find on like Kim Pomeroy, but like seemingly you can, but like, they should have lost that first game. I think if anybody watched it, that UMBC, it was a miracle save that the guy tried to save the ball in bounds. UMBC was in great shape to kind of make a closing play. They passed up a three in the last possession that I didn't totally enter. Drove into traffic. Anyway, but I mean, you know,
because in their mind, they're like, we're UMBC. We should not be beating Louisville, right?
You know, yeah. We always talk about
it. It's a mental hurdle there at some level.
Have you been there before? Yeah. They have. You know, we've seen it. We've seen them do it. But
right.
It's hard to assume at this point, based on what we've seen last season, was just a really difficult taste to get out of it. You know, it's kind of like if you buy White Castle, you get in the car. The next day, you know, you're going to smell it. You know, it's like it's just kind of – well, White Castle's not a thing out here. Maybe not the best reference. But
it lingers.
It's a pungent smell
right.
That lingers, the grilled onions and stuff. Last year was stinky grilled onions, and they can't get it out of the car. And the question is, are they going to be able to get it out of the car? It's hard to have confidence that they will. And if you're going to work from that, you know, supposition there, I think that like that assumption, how soon do they make a move? I think it's really the question that hurts to ask, because Kenny is a guy, even though he had a lot of success at Kentucky and has all these alums that swear by him.
He's a good guy. Everybody likes him. Yeah.
You mentioned Wagner.
Right.
Payne is right there at the middle of their history and their lore, and they were excited about bringing him back, and it's a hard conversation to have. And this is kind of the danger that I think that you run if you hire in family at times, is that, like, you know, if it doesn't work out, and UNC had that with Matt Doherty, I mean, it can be really hard to pull the plug on somebody that you care about like that.
Yeah, quickly, one last thing. If we had to close our eyes and look at, you know, we're in April, we're trying to figure out who's going to win the national championship. Is there a team that you close your eyes and you say, I don't know, it just makes sense to me. I think that they can actually do it this year.
I mean, I like Kansas. I know, you know, Tennessee has a lot of things working in their favor, too. They have the guard play. They have the experience, the tournament experience. They have a guy coming in that Dalton Echt is a guy who's a really impressive player. Tennessee has never, I don't think, in their school's history advanced to the Elite. I don't think they've been in the Elite Eight in their school's history, which doesn't mean that they couldn't do it. They could do it.
Miami went to the Final Four last year for the first time. San Diego State to the national championship game for the first time. So, you know, things can happen.
Miami is an interesting team, too. You know, coming off, they've got guys that come back. They got Matthew Cleveland coming in from Florida State. You know, they got Norchad Omir. They've got Wuga Poplar. They've got a lot of pieces that make sense. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the short list of the teams right now. Is there one off the top of your head that you got?
I mean, I think the most fascinating is Purdue, just because they come off losing to a 16 seed. There's a lot of people that want to buy the hype. They have the reigning national player of the year in Zach Edey. But,
well, that's clearly mattered in the past. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm not buying it. But, Kyle, man, I am buying you coming back on this show very soon. Appreciate you joining us. And we will see you right after the break.